Welcome to the podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. Our podcast weaves together the message and a taste of the music that we experience each Sunday morning as we root our lives in grace through worship here at The Table. More and more people are finding their way to The Table through this podcast, so if you are one of the many, many folks who tune in each week from other parts of California, other parts of our country, or even from other places in the world, we would invite you to take a next step in growing in faith here at The Table. You can do that online at our website, thetableumc.org. There you'll find links to social media and also a way to make a deep commitment to our community to express how you hope to root your life in grace, to grow in faith, to reach in love, and to give generously. If you're one of the many people listening to this but haven't quite walked through the door of the sanctuary yet on a Sunday morning, we would love to welcome you into the beauty of this sanctuary. We gather each Sunday for worship at 9:30 and at 11. Our address is 5265 H Street in East Sacramento.
For my long white robe.
This is Isaiah 58, and I'm going to be reading verses 1 through 12. Shout out, do not hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Announce to my people their rebellion. To the house of Jacob, announce their sins. Yet day after day they seek me and delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that practiced righteousness and did not forsake their ordinance of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. Why do we fast, but you do not see God? Why humble ourselves, but you do not notice God? Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day and oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose? A day to humble oneself. Is it to bow down the head like a bulrush and to lie in sackcloth and ashes? Will you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin, then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and God will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places, and make your bones strong, and you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets to live in.
You welcomed all to your table. Calling us to do the same. I want my life to make a difference. I want my life to make a change. I want my life to do some good here. I want my life to make a change. Working side by side, no outer inside. Together we can make that change.
When we heard that new song, knowing this scripture was coming, I just knew we had to sing it. How can we fix this? Is the mess too great? We heard those words at the very end of that long passage. I hope you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. You know, Matt and I plan these things out way in advance. People don't always know that. So it's interesting when things fall when they do. And from the moment I heard that phrase, you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets to live in, no matter what I did to try and unhook myself from my initial image, I had two images that have been so seared in my own mind. I want to share them. I couldn't shake them. Here's the first one. That's the Bay Bridge, Loma Prieta. And that's same shot before they cleared it out. Let's just leave that up there for a minute. It really shook us up. I lived in Albany. I was at Safeway getting shredded cheese for my World Series party. And we heard that the bridge had been breached. It sounds good on the surface to be considered a people who can repair broken breaches and restore streets, but when things look like this, and do it back one, let's remember. It's a major undertaking. And it can be even more of a challenge when the repair work that must be undertaken is a work within the souls of a whole people. And the hearts of individuals, especially when the individuals think they are already doing a bang-up job. See, Isaiah 58 portrays a people who want to do that bang-up job. They are seeking to understand how to worship God the right way, but they want to do this in a way in which really I think they can just check it off their list. But to give them the benefit of the doubt, I think they want to try to follow the rules and do them well. And they want, in doing that, God to take notice so that then they will receive God's good love and God's favor in their life. And it's not always easy to understand it when we read it like we did. So part of it is the people say, "Hey, God, why do we fast, but you do not see? Why do we humble ourselves, and you don't even notice?" What they learn is, when they express that, that they're actually failing miserably to integrate their spiritual practices of fasting with anything else that they do. So here's the critique that comes back to them. Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day and you oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Mm-mm. And then in verses 6 and 7, Isaiah gives voice to God, who reveals just the kind of fast that God is longing for. God says, "Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your home? when you see the naked to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin. Just a side note, that's Bible speak for don't look the other way when you see the homeless people right outside the door. Isaiah cries out against the confusion the people are having of true and false worship and condemning God's people for honoring the letter of the law of fasting while ignoring its spirit. I kind of think of it like this. You're fasting to be healthy and to be closer to God, and then you break your fast by absolutely like going to McDonald's or something. No offense. Maybe. And like gorging yourself. And you're like, Through the prophet, God is calling them to abandon this hollow ritual they're practicing so that they might come to know God by living into the intent of the law through reaching in love to their neighbors. I don't know if you've noticed, if this sounds familiar, if you've been here a few weeks, I think that's what we heard Matt talk about from the passage in Micah as well. Maybe it's kind of called low-hanging fruit. Since it's not very original, I feel like we're getting this each week. It's beginning to seem like the simple declaration of reach in love, people, is the foundation of nearly all prophetic proclamation. I guess our lack of skill at self-reflection means it can't be repeated too frequently from back then all the way to today. And I don't think it is that God thinks we're bad. It's more like God is a little bit like taken aback maybe at how our doing good can cause us to feel really good, which ends up being a cover for, well, kind of a lot. One theologian I read this week said, our conviction of pleasing God is being ridiculed in this. What we call holy, God calls kitsch. The prophet is pointing the way out of our self-delusion. Another prophet from our own history, a century and a half ago, as he led faith-rooted struggle in our country against slavery, his name was Frederick Douglass, maybe you've heard of him. He wrote this, between the Christianity of this land and the Christianity of Christ, I recognize the widest possible difference. So wide that to receive the one as good, pure, and holy is of necessity. To reject the other as bad, corrupt, and wicked. I hear it in a more modern way. This is a very short clip, so you have to really pay attention. But this is how I hear God.
Take it one step at a time. Identify the problem. Fix it. Identify another problem. Fix it. Repeat as necessary until it's all fixed.
Right? There are these things that just etch in my brain. Unfortunately, it's a little more complicated than that. God's people are given a new relationship of instruction. They're a new instruction. And their fasting has to connect with people, relationships. As the one seeking God's response to the needs of another, God will then respond to the person who's seeking. And Isaiah 58 that we heard is redefining worship as a lived experience of being in that right relationship with one another and with God, made known through personal ethical practices which are rooted in and flowing out of God's love. There's a Kentucky farmer and a poet. His name is Wendell Berry. He has this really short story called The Wild Birds. And there's this great character in there called Burley Coulter. And he says it very plainly again, like this. The way we are members of each other. All of us. Everything. The difference ain't in who is a member and who is not, but in who knows and who don't. Over and over again, God witnesses the way we stumble and falter in our attempts to be a loving people. And some seem to know, and some just don't. We sang it. Systems of oppression fueled by hate, held up by a lie we can't escape. It seems that at some moment the people of God cry out this question in every age. And throughout this worship series, we're calling life together. We're looking at the life and writing of a Lutheran pastor whose name is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Today happens to be his birthday. He would have been 111. Bonhoeffer is one of the most important Christian voices, we believe, of the 20th century. He participated in a resistance movement at the time of the rise of Hitler. And it's clearly a different era today, but he too was faced, Dietrich was, with this question as he himself pieced together his own life and theology in relationship to the systems of oppression unleashed by the Third Reich. Bonhoeffer's entire theological and political journey was shaped by his conviction that the church is only truly the church when it lives for all of God's children in the world, and that Christians fulfill our faith as Christians only when we live for other people. You see, he is a man who came to New York City in the 1939, and he had an opportunity to stay in the United States. He was a refugee here. He chose, though, think about this, to return to his homeland because he believed his future was tied in the future of that homeland, and to set himself up for safety here while his sisters and brothers died just was not acceptable to him. Turning his heart toward God for him meant that he would open his heart to God's overcoming love and live for others into God's unfolding future, being in right relationship. Another phrase from that song, humanity, a history of tragedy. Does it have to be the future of us all? Listen, I just want you to listen to some of Dietrich's thoughts. This is in the early 1930s. He warned that leaders became, he called them misleaders, when they were interested only in their own power and neglected their responsibility to serve those whom they govern. He warned us that when a government persecutes its minorities, it has ceased to govern legitimately. He admonished Christians to speak out for those who cannot speak. And in 1934, he reminded us that the church has a, this is a direct quote, unconditional obligation toward the victims of any social order, any societal order, even if they do not belong to the Christian community. Think about that. Think about that. The third and most recent immigration-focused executive order signed Friday, January 27th, targets refugees as well as those traveling from seven predominantly Muslim countries: Iran, Iraq, Somalia, Syria, Libya, Sudan, and Yemen. This action intended to shut the door on the world's most vulnerable people. Among other tragedies, the ban aimed to split up families, prevent many students in the United States from continuing their earned education, and threaten the jobs of many people who need to just simply travel for work. And notably, the number of Americans killed in the United States on our soil by citizens of those banned countries since 1975 is zero. The executive order suspended America's refugee program, as Matt said, for 120 days, bringing that refugee settlement effort here to a halt. Because many of the requirements of refugees, such as like our security screenings and medical exam, in case people don't know that, I didn't know this before we were working on this, they're all time limited. They expire, and they would have expired by the time the ban would be lifted. We sang it. Violence, power, struggle, fear, and shame. Will the story always be the same? Recently, the Islamic Center over in Davis and the Tarbiyah Institute in Roseville were vandalized by destruction of property and hateful words spray-painted on their buildings. Bonhoeffer wrote this: "Is there a political responsibility of the individual Christian? Individual Christians can certainly not be held responsible for the government's actions, nor dare they make themselves responsible for them. But on the basis of their faith and love of neighbor, individual Christians are responsible for their own vocation and personal sphere of living, however large or small it is. Wherever this responsibility is faithful exercise, it has efficacy for the state as a whole." Can we ever be the people we are meant to be? Does it have to be the future of us all? You know, I really hope not. I really hope not. I'm hearing some people are finding their way into activism, as Matt said, for the very first time in their life, finding both inspiration and courage on their own by going back and reading the words of Dr. King from a Birmingham jail. One small quote: "I had hoped," he said, "that the white moderate would understand that law and order exists for the purpose of establishing justice, and that when they fail, white moderates, in this purpose, they become the dangerously structured dams that block the flow of social progress." Does it have to be the future of us all? No. There are ways to fix it. Friday night, a federal judge in Washington state did what he could, and an appeals court in San Francisco have done what they can do to temporarily halt that ban. It's standing still this morning, and we're working as fast as we can. Does it have to be the future of us all? No. There are ways to repair the breach. Friday midday, in the middle of the workday, hundreds joined worshipers over in Roseville at the Tarbiyah Institute, and we did what we could to just be in prayerful solidarity. Together, in that space, Imam Aziz preached and reminded us of the story of Moses, which is part of Jewish, Christian, and Islamic scripture, and we prayed, all of us together, to turn our hearts away from fear and towards God. We prayed to restore our streets. Restoring our streets. This week, Art Street opened in Sacramento. Anyone ever even heard of it? Oh, good. Good. It features over 100 artists and performers. Very few of those artists are well known. That's why I say good. The project theme is of a street to allow artists and all of us that attend to explore and experience the notion of a street as transportation, connection, pathway, community, empathy, and much, much more. It's a chaotic place to be. It's different. Go. Go and see. Hear our prayer. Turn our hearts towards you, God. Make us one is what we sing. You see, true fasting leads to a reordering of the life of the community. Those who have, when it's reordered, share with those who need. Those who are free loosen the bonds of those who are caught in systems of injustice. And those with shelter extend shelter to the homeless. What concerns God is not our, though, reordering of our worship. It's how does worship reorder us? What difference does it make to anyone because you showed up here today? How does the practice of wondering together about how it is with our soul week in and week out shape our lives and choices? I can't answer that for anyone in this room, but a hint comes to us this morning from the prophets. Isaiah is asking, whom are you walking with, people? As the head of a rescue mission was recorded to have said to a seminary professor recently, you know what? Our biggest problem with Christians is they all want to take stands for the poor, come here, visit the poor, view the poor, hand out food to the poor, especially Thanksgiving and Christmas. But you can shake a stick at the number of Christians who come here wanting relationships with the poor. What have we done? What have we become? These seeds were sown in ages past, and now we're reaping them in full. So how can we fix this? Learn from our mistakes. Or is the mess just too great? We have to hold that. We have to be in that together. Because there's no way for a quick fix in this kind of rule of life. Relationships take time. Restoring and repairing takes time too. I want to take us back to that Bay Bridge. You know, some of us have traveled on the new one, right? It took 25 years. 25 years to rebuild a new bridge. It's not just been repaired, though. It was restored wholly differently. It's completely new and different. The people and the engineers and the bridge builders, they all worked together to build something beautiful, functional, but also beautiful. And it's something that if you go across it, you're no longer like this. You're open. And this isn't a great video, but we chose it because we want you to hear how they express the hard work, because I don't want us to be all romantic, the hard work it took to build this bridge. Let's watch.
Construction crews in California are racing against the clock this morning. The new Bay Bridge linking Oakland to San Francisco is set to open tomorrow. It's been nearly 24 years since a deadly earthquake collapsed two sections of the old structure. Manuel Bojorquez shows us how engineers are confident about the new crossing.
As graceful as the new span linking San Francisco to Oakland may appear, the battle to build it has often gotten ugly. In 1989, the Loma Prieta earthquake caused two 50-foot sections of the bridge to crumble and set off urgent calls to refurbish and ultimately replace that span. Debates over the design and construction caused constant delays and massive cost overruns. More than $6 billion later, the grand reopening is now set for Tuesday morning. Instead of a major celebration, says Bay Bridge Project spokesman Andrew Gordon, there is a sense of accomplishment.
There's been a lot of milestones throughout this project, and there's been plenty of ups and downs, particularly this year. So I think everyone is just very excited, relieved to be at this point.
The new span is designed to withstand even the strongest of earthquakes, says California Department of Transportation spokesman Malcolm Doherty.
This bridge is exponentially safer than the old bridge in a seismic event.
But the whole project was almost derailed when 32 bolts snapped this year during the final stages of construction. The Federal Highway Administration approved a temporary fix it says will make the bridge safe to open. When it does, it will be the longest single-anchored suspension bridge in the world. For CBS This Morning, Manuel Bojorquez, Los Angeles.
It's really hard work. What he lifts up is how much hard work it was. 25 years of struggling. And even with all of that hard work, that bridge isn't going to last forever, right? Future generations are also going to have to find new ways again to restore the streets and to repair the breaches. I'm going to close with a piece that was inspired by this passage in Isaiah 58 by our friend who's a poet, Steve Holmes. My child, I desire for you that you be surrounded by a world of love and joy and beauty. I have hidden this treasure in the hearts and lives of the people around you, especially those who are despised and oppressed, forgotten and abused, the ones whose lives do not matter to the world. To know this loveliness and nobility, to live in its world, you have to set those people free. You have to undo the chains of injustice. And to undo their chains, you have to stand with them and be near them and be among them and befriend them. For my law is to love, and this is righteousness, right relationships, just and loving and freeing. The laws I have given you are the signs, but they are not the road. The rules are the practices, but they are not the love. To fulfill righteousness is to break the separations between you and them, rich and poor, black and white. How can you undo the thong of the yoke if you do not stand with the slave? When your righteousness exceeds being good enough and becomes love, then you will know this realm I have prepared for you. The joy and the beauty I promise you. I who love you, who stand with you, who has set you free. Will we continue to simply go through ritual motions, or are we willing to be reordered, to repair the breaches and restore our streets?
Love shall overcome. Love shall overcome.